We are starting the show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and story, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com and mysticpete on social media. In today's show, I interview Deborah Pascaret, who's in charge of a wonderful story writing program at the Wallace in Beverly Hills called Staged Stories. Also, three stories created by and read by participants in the program. Cheryl Collin will read Moving On, Ashton Cynthia Clark will read The Lady in Red, and Sidel Wiener will read Michael. All the musical interludes I created. Stay tuned. Thank you.
And now please give a warm welcome to Cheryl.
I want to say a special thank you to Deborah and Victoria and the whole staff here at the Wallace and the fine programs that they have. My name is Cheryl Collin, and my piece is called Moving On. I came home from school to see a trailer hitched behind our car. All the doors open wide, the back seat leg space filled in with blankets to make a large bed. I look down at the books in my arms, dog-eared favorites my teacher had lent to me. I asked Mom if I could run back to the school quick just to return the books. But she shook her head and said we needed to hurry. I was angry with my stepfather, David, who kept us constantly moving from place to place. I tried to steer clear of his bossy finger as I loaded boxes into the trailer. It took 2.5 days to drive from Baldwin Park, California, to Little Rock, Arkansas, sleeping in parking lots along the way. David traded handles on his CB radio. Near Albuquerque, he made friends with a new trucker friend who offered to give my 5-year-old sister and me a ride. We met the bushy-bearded stranger in a smoke-filled diner. Debbie refused to go, but I was encouraged by David's smiles. For once, he acted as though he liked me, said I was a brave 7-year-old. So I rode along, pulling the handle of the booming truck horn, which got David and the trucker hooting back and forth over the CB. After, I felt weak-kneed and said I wanted to go back to my family. I was a little relieved that he radioed David right away. When we got to Arkansas, I was surprised that David's mother was such a tiny woman. She'd raised 11 kids. In the mornings, my sister, brother, and I were sent outside to explore her 20 acres. Debbie and Chris played catch one day with a red vegetable we'd never seen before. My brother screaming when he rubbed his eyes, and then screaming even louder when Mom rinsed them with the hose. We learned to avoid hot peppers. I fell asleep near an anthill one day and woke to find my scalp burning with angry red ants. I ran like a frenzied pinball, yelling for my mother. For me, that cool hose was a sweet relief. David slumped on the couch all day, turning into his mean old self again. He and Mom started to fight as usual about him going to the bar every night and still not having a job. Soon his oldest brother came by and told him it was time for us to move on. The next morning, David and my mother piled our things out in the field. I didn't understand what was happening until David brought out a can of gas and poured it on our clothes and books, on picture frames, a box that I knew held my toys. Mom said we didn't have money left for another trailer. She stood beside David's mother. Both of them looked like ghosts. David lit a match. I tried to be brave as I watched those flames lick at our boxes, kindling that fire's appetite. The heat burned against my face as that fire roared up to devour those things that were no longer ours. I closed my eyes and tried to imagine where we might go next. Thank you.
It's August 9th, 2022. Mystique Pete here at the Wallace with Debra Pascaret. I saw a show you put on in July here that was just fabulous, and I wanted to put you on radio and let the world know about this extraordinary work that you're doing. Tell me about it.
Sure. Thank you, Peter. Well, first of all, thanks for coming out to the show. That was our Stage Stories live show. And we're here at the Wallace Annenberg Center for the Performing Arts, and the show is actually on the Goldsmith stage, which is quite a big deal because these are older adults, 55 and up. And when I say up, not the oldest that evening, but I've had students up to 96 in my classes, so older adults. And it was a show really focusing on their own personal narratives, stories about their lives, and the class they took here at the Wallace was called Stage Stories, and through that class they write different stories, and then several times a year we showcase them on the main stages here at the Wallace.
I'm a storyteller, story writer myself. I featured a lot of them on radio. In fact, as the storytelling community was emerging in LA, I don't know, about a dozen years ago, I was very involved with it and in radio, and I'm going, oh, this is a radio show and nobody's doing it. I'm gonna be the first one. So I started collecting all these stories and recording people, and then those guys at the Moth came and scooped me. So the Moth got there first. Of course, they have this huge body of material they could use, and it takes a lot to record stories, but anyway, they came out with their wonderful show, and there's a couple other storytelling shows on radio too. But the night I came here and saw you guys, I was like, oh, these are some real professional actors and storytellers, because it was just a fine evening, very compelling, and then I find out afterwards, now these are mostly people who are on stage for the first time.
Many of them on stage for the first time. There were a few people that night, maybe two or three out of the 16 that performed, that have an acting background and when they were younger or before they retired. But most people come to the class just wanting to tell their story and really just, I mean, never, I'm sure, imagined when they started that they would end up in a 500-seat theater in Beverly Hills performing their story. I mean, they started in a class just writing an assignment and got that opportunity. And so, but what I find is the people that have no experience are just as incredible. I mean, you saw all of them that night. It's like they have, because there's such a level of authenticity in what they're doing, they don't need to act. They don't need to be professionals because they're just being real. They're just telling a story. And it's, you know, one of the things I've realized in doing this work is, I mean, and I've known this my whole life, but this has really brought it to light, is you just don't know what people are walking around with. Mm. You don't know what they're carrying. You don't know that this woman who's very quiet in your class, who says, "Oh, I'm so glad I found this class. My husband died 6 months ago, and this is the first thing I've decided to do." Oh, well, you find out later, her husband shot himself because he had pancreatic cancer. And she found him. And that story, she's never, of course her family knows it, but she's never written that down. She's never written down what it's like to walk out and find him and to have a detective, an LAPD detective, standing next to her, grilling her, because she's the wife, so maybe she's a suspect. Mm. When she knew, you know, I mean, so it's like a story like, I mean, which is just a horribly sad and tragic story. But in her telling that, I think there's this healing that happens. And I talk about this in class a lot. It's like, because I find that people will tell these extremely emotional stories. And they'll write the story, they'll you know, edit it for class or whatever. But when they start to read it out loud, it hits them in a different way than all the times they've told somebody at dinner, you know, at a Thanksgiving dinner or whatever, or even the writing of it. They might have been sad, but there's something about the sharing of the human experience and the story that it literally, I see it catch them in their throat. And so the first class, we always talk about that. We always talk about, like, what is that moment? What is that moment? And everyone's like, "Oh, I'm sure I'll be fine." And then it happens to them and they stop, and I see, and I say, when it happens, be with that moment. That's the essence of humanity right there, is when, because what you're doing is you're sharing your story, and there's something about that that's a healing. It's a healing act. It's an act of healing. I mean, that's another whole story, but the arts and healing and how the arts can heal. And one of the reasons I love doing work with older adults is not only for that healing property, but also, I mean, one of the biggest issues we have with older adults right now is isolation. And not just with the pandemic. I mean, when you think about it, people are retired, maybe their spouse has passed away, or they don't have a spouse or whatever. I mean, it's one of the most isolating times there is. And so the classes that we have here in creative aging, yes, learning the art form is important. So for example, in the show you saw that evening, which was focusing on stage stories, the writing classes, yes, the focus is learning to write your story, share your story, but more important than that to me is the act of community that's created. And so the community that's created, I mean, I keep waiting for the magic not to work, and thank God it hasn't happened so far, because every day, the first day of class, you know, we have 10 or 12 people, they've never met each other, they know nothing about each other, and by the third week, they're best friends. And they keep in touch way beyond the end of the class, because they let themselves be vulnerable. You know, they let themselves just be authentic and tell their stories and tell their truth. And there's something in that that creates this incredible community. And I think it also happens, and you could probably, you know, speak to this better than me, because I'm coming from teaching the class and directing the show, but for people watching the show, I think they feel that. I think they feel that there's something, I mean, not that the stories are related to each other, but that there's a sense of community that's built in the audience by hearing these types of stories together.
So. Well, there's certainly something deeply therapeutic about the arts in general.
Yes.
And very much so with writing and storytelling. And, you know, Lord knows we probably wouldn't have any love songs unless people had their hearts broken.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, I produce a lot of shows, and I tell people who are, and I do some counseling, and I tell people, well, you know, turn your pain into art, right, and get good at doing that, and you'll make a lot of money on the book or the movie you create. So
there's that beautiful quality to storytelling, and you're clearly bringing that into the work you're doing. And I will say, well, just to pat myself on the back a little bit, I'm a really good interviewer, and because I listen profoundly, and just about anybody I meet, you could take anybody off the street, and I could find their story. Mm-hmm. I could do a radio interview, and it would be very interesting. Even the most boring person out there, everybody has that.
Everyone has it.
And you're able to help facilitate that. So let's talk a little about the classes you do here at The Wallace. By the way, people can find out more information at thewallace.org.
Yes.
And so the show I saw was the culmination of some classes that you lead. Let's talk about that.
Sure. Well, we've been doing the creative aging classes now for, we started in 2019. And I've always been really interested in working with older adults. And I am an older adult, I should say. Nobody can see me, but I'm not 20. So I'm of the class that I'm teaching. And but before I even got into that group, I was always very interested in, because I just think that there's such a lack in our society of listening to people who are wise, who are seasoned, who have had a life, and who have lived a good big life and have something to talk about. And so to me, I've always been really interested in working in that group. And so we applied for a grant back in 2019, very small seed grant from the National Guild for Community and Arts Education. And it was to create a creative aging class. And I should probably say what creative aging is, like the definition of it is, it's a very different look on aging and on older adult classes than what you would think of your senior center, where you drop by for a guitar lesson on Fridays or whatever. It's not a drop-in. It's a 10 to 12 week class. There's an art form that's learned, that there's a curriculum that's followed, and there's a culminating event of some kind at the end of it. And it's not, I mean, and as I mentioned before, a big part of that is also making sure that there is meaningful engagement with, you know, not just like we have 10 minutes for coffee on a break, but that engagement is built into the classes themselves. So it does take, not saying I'm special, but it takes a teacher that gets that and can facilitate that and can feel the room and what's going on and how to facilitate that. So it's a longer class, it's a bigger commitment, but which also makes a bigger connection, right? Because they're together longer. And so I started out with, we got the funding, only 10 arts organizations in the country got the funding. We were one of them, and it wasn't a lot, but we were like, okay, we're gonna do this one class. It sold out in like moments, and so I immediately went to our director of education and said, can I do another class, since we already have enough people and I already have to do it. So anyone that works in the arts, you know how we are, we're like, let's do 17 more things because we don't have enough to do. And I was like, let's just do it. So sure. So that filled up, and so then the next time we did it, what happened was, it was very successful. We did a performance in the Lovelace Theater, a culmination of that class.
That's a theater here at the Wallace.
Yes, the smaller space here at the Wallace. It seats about 150 people. We did a show there. It was incredible. All of the performers had their headshots taken. They were treated just like any other artist here at the Wallace. We treat them like they're a show, just like any other, you know, artist that would come here. And we started the next semester. 3 days before we were to perform in the Lovelace again for the culmination of that semester, COVID. Everybody has the same story. We shut down. And fast forward 2.5 years later. So during that time, we shut down. So that class didn't even get to do their culminating event. Mm. And so what I decided to do, because they felt like, well, the whole world felt like the rug was pulled out from underneath them. But they really, I mean, they were at their final rehearsal for this thing they had worked for. And so I said, I'm going to continue this class throughout the summer for free. We're just going to keep meeting with them, because I just couldn't let them go. So I promised them that one day we would get to perform. They would get to perform at the theater. So meanwhile, we flipped everything online, and we ended up doing 4 and 5 classes a semester instead of 2 because they were filling up. I added a second class called Beyond Words, which not only has the storytelling aspect but has a visual art as well that goes with it, that they create things to go with their stories. And so here it is 2.5 years later, and I said, let's do a show that can invite anybody from those 3 years of classes to come and perform. So they submitted, I put a call out, didn't know who would still want to do it. And we had spaces for 15 or 16 people to read. I had 57 stories turned into me the first day.
Oh, yeah.
So my weekend my weekend turned into reading a whole lot of work. And
that's the hard part, saying you can't do
it. I know, and I had to choose 15 people. And honestly, and I'm not just saying this to be, you know, whatever, but I really, any one of those stories could have been on the stage that night. And I say that because it's not the best writer or the best storyteller, but sometimes it's just the right story for that person at that time. And they were really all right, but I had to make a decision, and I wanted to honor that class that got cut off when COVID reared its ugly head in 2020. So a lot of the people you saw that night were from that class 2.5 years ago that never got to perform. And they hadn't performed their story in 2.5 years. So when they showed up that day, July 6th, that day when they showed up at the theater in the afternoon, they had never even rehearsed since 2.5 years ago. And then I also had people from all different classes. I decided to open up to everyone. Now, I think we're over 200 now students who have gone through the program, or at least taken one or two of the classes. And so part of what we're gonna do now, because we're expanding the Creative Aging Program here at the Wallace, to not just writing, but probably dance and music and theater and film and other things, all with that same template of the creative aging structure. And so we're going to be expanding a lot of things, but what we'll do, there'll be culminating events after every class, like maybe in the education courtyard, or if it's an online class, because we'll still do some things online, a Zoom performance. But then 3 or 4 times a year, they'll be on the big stage here at the Wallace as part of the program. So that will be a sprinkling of people from all, and I will make a call again to those students and say, what would you like to read? And then I know that I'm not going anywhere that weekend because I'm reading a lot of stories, which is great.
There's this thing called creative aging.
Yes.
But in response to this problem of older people being warehoused, forgotten, isolated.
Yeah.
I mean, some societies, the older people are just part of life and
yes,
living with
yes.
the family, but now they're kind of shunted off someplace, and it's a tragedy.
It's a total tragedy.
And it really has to be solved societally. It's very hard for a family to even know what to do with their elderly mom or dad. There's not the resources within most nuclear families. So things like this.
Yeah.
This is the answer, like having community
it's
programs.
It's community,
It has to be solved on this level, where 2 or 3 times a week or every day, somebody who's older can do something interesting and participate.
Right.
And these stories, like, it's not just for their enrichment. These are important messages, this information, ideas that enrich society. This is good for all of us.
It's for everybody.
Win-win, right?
Yeah.
So this is a beautiful thing that's happening, and just kind of about time. Anecdotes from the classes you've taught, like, tell me, have you seen people go through transitions? I mean, you've mentioned how close people become when
they become
confiding and being vulnerable and sharing their most intimate details. But anything you remember?
Well, it's really interesting. I had one student that, and this is, it's when you mention the family, it's always you know, of course, family is so important to people, and some people's families are here, some people are here on their own. You know, there's all different situations. But one of, I have many people who's, they'll say, my daughter signed me up for this, you know, or my son blah, 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 saw this on the website, blah, blah, blah. And so they're kind of a little bit like, I don't know about this.
They've been dragged in.
Yeah, I don't know about this. And then they're just like, oh my God, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. But the one of my favorite stories is we had a participant who was 98. She was blind. And her daughter said, my mom really wants to take this class. I think she'd really love it. And so her daughter didn't even live here. Her daughter lived in Oregon and her son lived in Michigan, somewhere over there. And so because she couldn't see anymore, she would call her son or daughter and dictate her story that was due for the week to them. They would sign on the Zoom at the beginning of the class and read the story, which I almost come to tears when I think about just that. I mean, here's this woman talking about, you know, Brooklyn in 1910, but it's her daughter's voice that's reading her words. And even better, Peter, is the mother who's blind is looking at the camera and mouthing the words. And it's like amazing. I mean, amazing. You know, and she, you know, they said, oh my God, my mother looks forward to this. I mean, she's in, it's beautiful. She's, her hair is done, her makeup's done. She's just so excited to, and this is on Zoom. This isn't even in person. We just came back to campus in May of this year, and we just did two classes here on campus. And I have to say, I mean, Zoom has been amazing. It has connected people. It has been a lifeline. I've had so many people tell me it was a total lifeline to have that. But there is something about having people in a room or outside on a patio, in our case, because we were doing everything outside because just to be a little safer for COVID. But I can't really compare because the people online, same thing. But there are people that, there's a woman this last semester who did this beautiful piece about how when she was younger, when she walked into a room, people turned around. When she spoke, people listened. She ran a company. She was very successful. And now, even though it's so much to be grandma and mom, there's no Jill anymore, right? So where your identity when you're older is slowly sort of taken away from you because you don't have your job anymore, you don't have those things. And so she did this beautiful piece where she talked about being invisible and how as much as she loves her family and as much as she wants to hear about her grandchildren, it's so hard because nobody asks about, they don't say like, how is your painting class going? Or how is your, because, and it's not their fault. They're in the craziness of being 30 something and raising a family and everything, but it's just sort of like she just becomes mom or grandma and there's no, they forget that there was this incredibly successful person behind it. And that was really touching to me. Because I think that that's a story that's very, many people can identify with that. And one of the things I'll say, when we start classes, I never ask people what they do or what they did. You know, most of the time when you go to a class, well, I'm so-and-so, and I work at the Wallace, and I do this and that. No, we don't do that. We start right where everybody is. I don't ask. And part of that reason is, let me tell you this one, because there are things that happen, like I find out at the end of class that one of my students is, you know, the first woman that won an Emmy for writing comedy. And I find out, like, these, you know, incredible writers who end up, but have never told their own story. You know, very successful, like, literally, I don't want to say what shows, a huge, huge comedy writer, won Emmys, very successful, but never told the stories that she wrote in my class about her first days in New York, how she was raped in the elevator when she went to her apartment the first week that she moved in because someone didn't close the door. Oof. You know, somebody like said, hold the door open, and the guy pushed her in. She never told that story out loud before. And she's in her 80s. And I mean, her words are famously in many, in a very big TV show, but she's never talked about her own life. And so, and I just say, I'm glad I didn't know, because I would have been intimidated, like, just because I'm like, oh my God, you're this person that did this. But I don't want any of that in the middle of it. I want to come, I want us all to come and meet in the same, on the same plane. We're just humans in a room, and here we are today. It's about today. You know, and if you want to talk about what you did in your career, in your writing, that's fantastic. But it's not about that. It's about, where are you today? Because many people are trying to define what that is for them, right? It's like they don't know yet. And so, you know, the possibilities are there. And you know, just the community, when I'm thinking about the community thing, one of the other things we're going to be doing is I'm trying to provide, you know, what we're creating is like this huge group of alumni who have gone through the program, who have met other people, and they will always be connected to the Wallace. So there will be programs that, for example, at the end of August, we're having I'm calling it summer camp, but it's like a creative aging arts retreat for 3 days. And it's 9:30 to 2:30 in our education courtyard. There's gonna be writing classes, there's gonna be a film class. We have two dance classes, and the beautiful thing about working at the Wallace is I have access to these incredible artists that work here, and so they are very excited to work with these programs. And so we'll get to have some amazing people come and work with them. So that, like, the camp is going to be not just writing, but like a tasting of all of the arts. We have a wonderful cellist who's going to come and do a piece on songwriting. So that's going to be a 3-day event, and it sold out immediately. I mean, immediately. It didn't even get to marketing because there were so many people that within the community of people who have taken the classes that wanted to come and do something else, they were like, yes. So we could probably do a few of them, but we just don't, you know, there's only so many of me and the rest of the staff.
Well, you know, here at the Wallace, there's so many resources, and there's just this cultural center, so it's a wonderful place to be. And as you said, you don't base your classes on symbols of success.
No.
You just come in, whoever comes, that's who they are, and their stories are revelatory. And also another point you make is that things change as we get older, into old age.
Yeah.
We perhaps become different people, and our skills become something else and maybe decline, but we are what we are,
right.
And that's the way you have to start. And I remember my father was this bull of a man, this kind of terror, but in his old age, you know, he had a stroke and became very gentle, but he could still tell stories. This transmission from people of age and wisdom, it's, I think, very important, not just for them, but for all of us.
For everyone. I have to say, our education assistant is 23, and she is so enamored by the people in the program and has become so close to them. And is so, I mean, it's like, I love seeing a younger person. It's very funny though, because like one woman just did a piece about the Who, and I just had to say, do you know who the Who is? And she was like, no. And I'm like, how do you not know who the Who is?
No.
But it's like,
no.
It's like, that's blasphemy. You can't not know who the Who is. But it's really, the thing is that I think that the program equalizes people. And like you said, the stories are for everyone. You know, I mean, you were there on the 6th, and we had quite a large audience that night, and there were people of all ages that were there. You know, I usually don't have children come because I don't edit, but I let people write what they want. And sometimes it's a little racy. Sometimes it's a little sexy. Sometimes it's a little, but that's what life is, right? That's what it is.
Yeah, and old people aren't necessarily prudes.
No, they're not. They've lived more than anyone else, and they have things, and they're also still people, and they still love people, and they still want things, and they still, you know, and so I...
And death was a topic, and, yeah. You know, these people didn't seem to be afraid of death.
No. People who have been through major things. Major medical things and issues and I mean it's I do have to say, because you know the classes are 2 hours and we meet once a week, and I have this last semester had 5 classes, and so that's a lot of stories every week. By the end of the semester I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
Because In a beautiful way, not a, and in no way am I complaining. I feel so lucky, but the heaviness of the human experience lands in my heart and in my body, and so I always make it work that I have at least so I can take almost a week off in between, so that I just don't hear any stories and I don't, you know, I just kind of. I'm a visual artist too, and I work on visual art, and I work on things that aren't related. I hang out with my dog and my birds, and you know, try not to do anything, to just kind of cleanse the palate in a way.
You know, care for the caregivers.
Yeah.
Thank you. We so appreciate what you're doing. Yeah. Deborah Pascaret, thewallace.org for more information. You'll be here and more shows and more classes.
Classes are coming in September, so check out the website. There's going to be lots of new classes and lots of exciting things.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
Now I'm happy to introduce Ashton.
I'm Ashton Cynthia Clark, and this story is The Lady in Red. 2019 was full of those gray days, when depression threatened to crush my skull between its filthy hands. I rolled out of bed like a corpse being unfurled from a dirty length of carpeting. But it was concert day, and I'd already splurged $25 on a ticket. So I pulled on my personal depression era uniform of black pants and whatever blouse. Just between us, I didn't have a lot of choices. You see, I was fast approaching that 90-day mark at the dry cleaners, where they throw your stuff out on the street if you don't come and pay for it. So I pulled off one of 2 remaining clean blouses from a hanger, plus a matching pashmina. But I looked halfway decent. Mommy, you always did say red was my color. So here I am at the fabulous World Stage Performance Center in Leimert Park. I'm way early, so the stage is still pretty bare. There's a drum kit in the background and the violin propped up in the court. Oh my gosh, she just walked by me. Oh, she is so beautiful. And so alive. I'm loving the shaved edges she's sporting these days, with a single long twisted braid down the middle and a solo earring dangling on the side that will not shortly be cradling her violin. God, can I work up my nerve enough to just say hello? Miss Briggs, do you mind if I say hello? I realize now that your body of work is so much more expansive than the concerts you did with Yanni, but my mom and I watched you on PBS back in 1994, and it's such a special memory of mine. By the way, I love your single earring. She thanked me, she smiled, and then she shared that those concerts were a special time for her, too. Then she asked my name and took my hand. And she's going to be bowing with that hand in 5 minutes. Oh, Mommy, I remember. Wasn't it scandalous the way you and I both oohed and awed over Yanni? That Greek musician and composer with his sparkling white shirt and white pants fluttering in the wind, tossing his long flowing hair. But then the camera found that lady, a black woman like us, in this blazing red dress and a red head wrap. And then our eyes and everyone in the world was focused only on her and her violin and her lightning fast fingers, her dueling duets with the concertmaster and her solos. Miss Karen Briggs, the lady in red. Mommy, it's been over 25 years since you and I saw that concert together. Yanni, live at the Acropolis from Athens, Greece. But the following year, we were crying over you. The lymphoma, it reemerged, aggressive and angry. Angry at having been pushed aside in remission for 8 months. About a week after the New Year's, you couldn't stop coughing. And then a few quick days later, you were gone. But the elation of listening to that music with you, it reverberates still so loud and so clear. So I'm grateful for one day at a time, that just for today, I could kick depression to the curb. Just for today, I'm meeting life in full color, because we had to be here to meet the lady in red. Uh-oh, the lights are dimming. She's coming to the stage. Mommy, get ready. Thank you.
Thank you. And now I'd like to welcome to the stage Sidel.
Hello. This is called Michael. I parked my car, flipped down the visor mirror, and made peace with the older version of myself. Deep breath, and then I grabbed my phone. "I just parked," I texted. "I'm here," he wrote back. Oh good, I wasn't the first to arrive. "I'm wearing black with a black and white scarf," I wrote. "I'm naked," he shot back. "It figures," I retorted, enjoying the banter. So with studied confidence, I walked towards the restaurant. And then I saw him, a handsome man with a full head of thick silver hair. He waved, so I joined him at the outdoor table and took off my mask. "Hi, I'm Sidel." He smiled. "I'm Michael. You look just like your picture. Very pretty." I started to relax. We talked about our careers. He was interested when I told him I was a theater professor. "Who's your favorite playwright?" he asked. "Ibsen," I replied without hesitation. "I read an Ibsen play in college," he said. "A woman named Mrs. Alving with syphilis. Does that sound familiar?" "Of course," I answered. But for the life of me, I could not remember the name of the play. He was in the restaurant business and let me in on the best place for eggplant parmesan. "I love eggplant," I gushed. "Oh, good, I'll have to take you there." A bottle of wine later, he returned me to my car. I drove to the ticket booth and got out my wallet to pay. The attendant grinned. "The gentleman behind you already paid." "Wow. Nice touch, Michael." The next day, I searched like mad for the name of that Ibsen play. "Ghosts, of course." Oh well, I thought. Good excuse for a text. I remembered the name of that Ibsen play I texted. "It's been bugging me." He answered immediately. "I'm getting under your skin. That's a good sign for a new relationship. Still want to go for that eggplant parmesan?" Our second date, he brought eggplant parmesan to my backyard. He was charming and funny. His eyes lit up when he spoke. And when he smiled, his face seemed to glow. I fell immediately under his spell. As the days and weeks passed, we became inseparable. We threw Yiddish expressions at each other, sang songs from old Broadway plays, lit candles every single night, and danced down the aisle of the neighborhood Ralphs. We had the vacation of a lifetime in Zihuatanejo, with dinner under the stars, 3 feet from the edge of the ocean. And we held hands. We held hands at night, and we held hands the day that we got the diagnosis, esophageal cancer. Caring for Michael became my mission in life, and I embraced it. When he was hurting, I held him close and gave him love, and he returned that love in spades when he was healthy, but even when he was too sick to speak. We all want things to last forever. But when you get to be my age, you realize that nothing really does. And that's okay. I had almost 2 years with this delicious, exuberant man. How could I ever be sorry for that? Rest well, Michael. And thank you for coming into my life.
Thank you.
We are coming to the end of the show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. If you'd like to reach me, I am at mysticpete.com and mysticpete on social media. Today, an interview with Deborah Pascaret, who heads up Stage Stories, a writing program at The Wallace in Beverly Hills. More information at thewallace.org. We heard the following stories created and read by participants: Cheryl Collin, Moving On, Ashton Cynthia Clark, The Lady in Red, and Sidel Wiener, Michael. These three stories were recorded live on the main stage at The Wallace. It was quite a night. I composed all the musical interludes. We'll be back next week with the best of talk radio. Mystic Pete out!